The following is a listener-supported ministry from the Grace Evangelical Society.
We are continuing a discussion about the Messianic thread. If you are just joining this series, I suggest you go back and listen to the past few episodes on our website, faithalone.org. But for today, we're going to describe and follow the seed line of the Messiah. This is Grace in Focus. We're glad you're joining us today. We are a ministry of the Grace Evangelical Society. Please have a look at our website, faithalone.org. Right now, we are encouraging you to go to our conference ministry section, look at the details for our national conference coming up soon, and get registered. We would love to have you with us this May 19th through the 22nd. Find it at faithalone.org. Now, with today's discussion, the seed line of the Messiah, here are Bob Wilkin and Philippe Sterling.
All right, Philippe, so what's on the agenda for today on the Messianic thread?
Well, of course, we started talking about Genesis 3:15 and what follows in the rest of chapter 3. And we briefly mentioned chapter 4 and then save that for further discussion. But just a brief review again of Genesis 3:15. I think in Genesis 3:15, of course, we see the matter of the seed that we can follow through, to Genesis 7:14 to Matthew 1 and
Isaiah 7:14.
Yeah, Isaiah 7:14 about the virginal, conception of the child. That is.
So we're going to follow the seed. Yeah, we're going to talk in this session about the seed and how it's in the whole thread, the seed line of the Messiah.
Right. So there's a seed line of the Messiah that's there. And then there's the ruling aspect, of the Messiah. I think that is there, but that becomes clearer as we go in the book of Genesis, even in
the scepter idea.
This scepter idea.
And a scepter is this stick that they would have.
And that's a thread. I was surprised where else it does occur through the Old Testament. So we can talk about the scepter at the time, too. And then there's the suffering aspect. So you have the seed, the suffering, and the scepter aspect that
the triple S. Seed, suffering. I'm writing this down. And scepter. I like it. Scepter, suffering. And you got to have the suffering to get the scepter.
Right.
And we have to have the suffering if we want to share in the scepter.
As well, the sharing in the messianic experience of suffering and of ultimately of victory and ruling, too.
All right. Well, let's start in 4:1, which is where we left off last time.
Okay.
Let me read 4:1. And now Adam knew his wife, Eve his wife, meaning they had relations, and she conceived and bore Cain. So their first child was, or at least their first son. Evidently, this is also the first child because it would be odd if they left out any other children. And said, I have acquired a man from the Lord. Although not everybody agrees that's the best translation.
No. In fact, the Hebrew just simply says, I have acquired him and I have given birth to a man, Yahweh. And that's what it says. So here the translator is supplying from the Lord. That's an interpretive thing. But the text simply says, I have begotten a man, the Lord.
Which almost implies that they think Cain is the Messiah?
It implies that Eve thought that this birth of the first man was a fulfillment of the promised seed. And she recognized the seed as being the incarnation of the Lord who's been.
So she didn't see the Genesis 3:15 to be looking at a line of people in the line of Messiah.
It's fulfilled right now.
And by the way, she couldn't be more wrong because Cain wasn't exactly a good candidate to be in the line of Messiah.
Well, and he grew up, and certainly, and there was Abel, but Abel died. So it's interesting, where.
So then you got to get Seth.
And then we have to get Seth.
So which is 130 years later or so.
Right. And then when we see the whole matter of Seth and his birth. And so we go to chapter 4, then continuing in chapter 4 to verse 25.
All right.
And it says, and Adam knew his wife again, and she bore a son and named him Seth. Now, Seth, some think it's just similar to Ish, to man. So it's just his name, man.
Right.
And it's interesting that Eve's name had been
Isha.
Isha. And so, I'm sorry, it's not Seth, but his son Enosh that carries the idea of man.
Okay.
As well, not Seth. Seth, I think it means simply like the appointed one.
Okay.
And then she says, for God has appointed another seed for me instead of Abel, whom Cain killed.
So Abel would have been the seed if he hadn't been killed?
In her mind, you know, perhaps. But now she sees Seth, you know, as being the line of the seed. You know,
which, according to chapter 5, if you read the beginning of chapter 5, you see when you get the line of Messiah in verse 3, Adam lived 130 years and begot a son in his own likeness after him and named him Seth. So when you read Genesis 4, you get the impression that Seth is born pretty close to after when Cain kills Abel. Well, we don't know how old Cain and Abel were. I mean, I tend to assume they were in their 20s or something, but who knows? They could have been 80 or 100 because they were going to live to be 1,000. But in any case, however old they were, there's really no time element to tell us how long it was between the death of Abel and the birth of Seth.
Yes.
But we do know from Genesis 5 that Adam and Eve were 130 when Seth was born. Imagine how many total children they probably had.
Yeah, of sons and daughters.
Right.
And of course, the old thing, you know, who did Cain marry? You know, who was Cain's wife?
Well, one of his sisters.
One of his sisters.
Because before the law of Moses, it was not forbidden to marry your sister. After all, Abraham married his half-sister.
Just jumping in here to make you aware of our magazine, Grace in Focus. It is a bi-monthly, 6 issues per year, 48-page magazine, full color. And we want you to subscribe by emailing your name and your snail mail address to ges@faithalone.org. The subscription is free. It can be accessed electronically or it can be actually physically sent to you if you live in the lower 48 United States. That's our Grace in Focus magazine. Send your name and snail mail address to ges@faithalone.org.
The gene pool was perfect at the beginning, and so marrying one sister would not have created insanity and wouldn't have created problems. And of course, very quickly, there would have been so many cousins that you're now going to be probably marrying one of your first cousins.
But the point here is that Eve names him Seth and sees that as the continuation of this. There's a seed, somehow the seed promise.
And you said Seth means something like appointed?
Appointed, or one translation I've even said the chosen one.
Okay.
But again, that's making, you know, dealing with etymology and everything, so not completely sure of that. But then this points that with his son, as for Seth, to him also a son was born, and he named him Enosh. And here's, that's related to Ish.
Okay. You know?
Then it says, then men began to call on the name of the Lord. So here's the idea, there's a worshiping community. Here we have the implication that there were a believing and regenerated group of people that began to gather together to proclaim, talk about Yahweh
and by
all his attributes and everything else.
Right. And by the way, we should understand probably that even Cain was likely a believer.
Yeah, because he was in direct communication with Yahweh, and there was certainly dealing with temporal consequences and everything. That Yahweh did not take his life. And then even gave him a mark of protection. I think it's a fair implication.
I mean, Cain,
that he may have been believing, you know.
Well, he comes up in 1 John chapter 3, and we're told to be like Christ, who laid down his life, not like Cain, who took the life of his brother. Okay. Jesus laid down his life for the brethren. Cain killed his brother. But Hodges makes the point that it would be rather bizarre to use an unbeliever as an example of the way believers are not to act. Yeah. It would make more sense if Cain were a believer who had erred, believer who had fallen. And by the way, it would be extremely odd if any of Adam and Eve's children was not a believer. Because wouldn't they have told them, they may not have understood this was the pre-incarnate Messiah, but they understood this was the Lord. we met the Lord, here's what he told them, he's coming, and it would have been very unlikely that any of the children would have been unbelievers.
Yeah, and both Cain and Abel were understanding of the whole matter of worship and such. So it's possible that even there was an altar, you know, near the entrance to Eden. They weren't allowed in, but they still could go there and worship and fellowship with Yahweh. But the seed line then continues with Seth. And then, of course, we follow through the 10 generations, you know, that occurs to Shem. And then through Shem, you know, Terah and Abraham. And that's where we pick up the seed concept. Then again with Abraham.
Yes.
Abraham's seed, Genesis 12 and then Genesis 15, clearly that it will be of his direct seed that the line of promise, you know, will continue. And we followed in the seed promise with David and the whole Davidic covenant in 2 Samuel chapter 7. And then with Isaiah, I think with Isaiah 7:14, we pick up again the seed concept and the child that is clearly by his throne names in Isaiah 8 is what? No, Mighty God among his throne names. So the idea, again, clearly of incarnation and of rulership also. And then in Isaiah, we have the whole concept of the suffering servant. We have in Isaiah both suffering and ruling aspects of it.
Well, what about Handel's Messiah? Isn't that from Isaiah 9?
And his name shall be called Wonderful Counselor and so on.
In Isaiah.
Through Isaiah, you know, Handel develops that whole concept.
And that's a beautiful, you know, chorus and everything. Yeah. But it's also beautiful because it's true. It's all scripture.
Yes. And then clearly in Matthew, the link to Isaiah 7:14 is clearly made in the virgin conception of Christ. And this was in accordance, of course, clearly it says in Matthew 1 of what Isaiah, you know, had said. And then Paul clearly makes that too, I think, in Galatians 4, you know, for in the fullness of time, you know,
God
sent forth his son, born of a woman. But contextually with what we have of the scriptures, born of a woman, I think, is implicating the fact that he was virgin born. You know,
and it also implies Genesis 3:15 to some extent, the seed of the woman.
Well, so that's where we follow the whole matter of the seed of the woman. Then we come to Revelation chapter 12, too, where we see the seed and who will come to you, the nation Israel.
Yes.
But yet also in Revelation 12, we see not just a figure of Israel as the woman that gives birth to that, but also there's one distinct person, which I think is Mary, that we see also in Revelation 12. So we come through, again, from Genesis to Revelation 2, following through that concept.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Well, we got through the seed. Now we need to talk more about the scepter. And we'll pick up the scepter in the next one. And in the meantime, let's all
keep
grace in focus.
Would you be interested in some free ebooks on topics you hear on this program? Well, if you are, you need to come visit us at faithalone.org. That's faithalone.org. We would love to hear from you. Maybe you've got a question, comment, or some feedback. If you do, please don't hesitate to send us a message. Here's our email address. It's radio@faithalone.org. That's radio@faithalone.org. And when you do, very important, please let us know your radio station call letters and the city of your location. On our next episode, The Scepter and the Messiah. Please join us, and until then, let's keep grace in focus.
The preceding has been a listener-supported ministry from the Grace Evangelical Society.